Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son that he may die. Because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cast down the grove that was by it. Now this group, I don't know, but I would guess, is about 5 to 6 generations from Moses. Somewhere in that period. Going through the Red Sea. Pharaoh in the chariots. Remember all the story? 5 to 6 generations. And the story is so dim that they're worshiping Baal and Ashtaroth instead of Yahweh, the God that delivered them through that mighty hand of deliverance. When we get sick, it's awful easy to forget the glory of God. When we get down and depressed, it's very easy to forget all the good things that God provided for us a few weeks ago, a few months ago. And we think it's going to be like this forever. So we begin to turn our thoughts from Him to some other source. Am I speaking to anybody here? Or am I just talking about Gideon? All right. I don't even know where I was now. What verse? I think I finished it, didn't I? Joash said unto all that stood against him. Now watch this tricky way of handling this. Will you plead for Baal? Will you save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it's yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one has cast down his altar. Well, here's these guys are so mad they're ready to kill old Gideon, and now that answer turns them. Therefore, on that day he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him, because he hath thrown down his altar. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. Now, you remember anything about Jezreel? It's the same as Armageddon, same valley. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. I was reading that in Hebrew, it's clothed Gideon. And he blew a trumpet, and Abiezer was gathered after him. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers into Asher, and unto Zebulun, to Naphtali, and they came up to meet him. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt now save Israel by my hand, as thou hast said, behold, I'll put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if it be dew on the fleece only, and dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. Now, I've heard it said that putting out a fleece is wrong. I've heard it taught that fleeces are wrong. But I don't agree. Let me tell you, God's asking this man to do a hard thing. He's asking this man to go against all that he knows is logical. Are you following me on this? Now, there are times in our own lives when we come upon God and we have to leave all that we know is logical, don't we?
Everything behind what you know, you need to
And then it's all gone because you knew it. You were convinced of it. Don't remember all the details of how I felt when I first had to deal with the fact that God was a healer. Because after all, I was trained in the realm of logic. And the healer had a little sign out the front of his house that had MD after his name. And then somebody said, God heals. By his stripes, we're already past tense, healed. And that was hard to leave logic, to leave all that we had been trained in, all that we knew. And yet, I don't think God asks us to leave all that we know without appearing to us several times before to show us that He is God. And I'm convinced that every person here has got an aunt or a grandma or somebody in their family who's been whispering in all, or maybe yelling in all the ears of all their family, that God is a healer, a baptizer, and that every family's got one of these guys. Is that right? I said, all right, give me a nod. Does everybody have one in your family around, or you know somebody like that? That's been, or a neighbor, or somebody who's contacted you in some way and said, and given you some testimonies about the way God does. Now, here's this guy, Gideon, who's got this bright, shiny angel, appears to him, consumes the offering in a blazing fire, then disappears himself in a blaze of glory. And now he's saying to God, make the fleece wet so I can know. But you know, all through this Bible, you don't find any fault found with him. And he ends up in the Hall of Fame, called a man of faith, by faith. Do you see what I'm driving at? So, I don't feel that a fleece is a lack of faith. I feel a fleece is a desire for confirmation. Because God always said He would speak at least twice. In Genesis chapter 41, verse 32, Joseph, if you're writing notes, put that down. Genesis 41, 32. Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh, the dream was doubled unto you because God established it, and it will shortly come to pass. In Job, it says God speaks once, yea, twice in dreams and visions of the night. And in the Psalms, it says God speaks twice. In the Epistles, it says, let everything be established out of the mouth of two or three witnesses. So they asked Jesus who He was, and He says, your law demands two witnesses. What God said about me and what I say, that's your double witness. Later on, they said, well, we don't believe you. So He said, all right, what the prophets said about me and my works, that's your double witness all over again, because God speaks twice. Then in 1948, we came upon a new move of God in the United States called, does anybody remember? No, that wasn't 48. That was the latter rain. In 1948, nobody had heard of the full gospel businessman. The full gospel businessman in 1952 were still putting out mimeograph sheets of paper instead of fancy four-color press work. In 1948, God moved sovereignly. Mainly, or at least it seemed to start up around Detroit, Michigan, in a church, Jim Beal. Have you ever heard of Jim Beal? Well, he's a big name, charismatic, but he was a big name in the latter rain back then. And his mother, Sister Beal, laid hands on people and imparted gifts and so forth. Then that started a big flap among the Pentecostals. Because the Pentecostals would allow people to speak in tongues, but they couldn't allow them to prophesy. I don't know whether you knew that or not, but back in 48, there was a big split among the largest denomination, the Pentecostals, Assembly of God, and over 400 churches in Texas alone left the assembly because they believed in prophecy, and the assembly said, nope, you can speak in tongues, but you can't prophesy. Kind of reminds me of the Baptists talking about the Methodists, or the Methodists talking about the Pentecostals. Or the, you see what I'm driving at? Every time there's a move, they snap the trap shut and won't let it go on. So there was a change. People began to prophesy. Now he's got the Spirit of the Lord on him, and watch the change. But even with the Spirit of the Lord on him, he's asking for a confirmation again, a fleece. You all remember the story of the fleece. Because even after it worked out that way, he said, no, Lord, don't be mad. But how about a flip? How about the ground wet and the fleece dry the next night? Just to make double sure. And the Spirit of God is on him. Before I go too far away from throwing down the altar, calling your attention to the fact that he used his father's bullock, plow, what do they call it? The ox yoke. And he proceeded in his own might in the natural realm. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think there are times when people misunderstand the leading of the Lord. Most of us know of churches and works in the name of the religion that are constantly in the natural realm. And so we react against that. But it wasn't wrong for him to proceed in his own might. But he used it up. He used up the bullet. Instead of eating it, he sacrificed it. He used up the plow. I'm not positive, he doesn't say that, but I'm assuming that he put the yoke and the plow. It was a wooden plow, probably. All the other things had been cut down in the grove that day. He made this altar, burnt all everything he had. And there is a time when God calls us to do what we can do and use up all of our own material until it's all gone. And of course, you see what I'm leading to. When Israel came with 32,000 to beat up on the Midianites, God caused them to go through the same pattern of reducing and reducing and reducing till there was, in effect, nothing left. You remember, and we'll get to that story in a minute if we can. So, verse 38, it was so, he rose up early in the morning and thrust the fleece together and wringed the dew out of the fleece to a bowl full of water. Gideon said unto God, thou let not thine anger be hot against me. I'll speak for this once. I don't know how I'd been then. I don't know whether I'd been scared to speak this way or not. How about you? Well, you see, you know the outcome. You know how the story's going to go. But if you hadn't known the end from the beginning, maybe it'd been easier to talk to God two or three more times. Say, God, you sure? That you want me to do this thing? Gideon said to God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I'll speak this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, that this once with a fleece, let it now be dry only on the fleece, on the ground, let it be dew. God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and it was dew on all the ground. Is there any indication that God was mad at Gideon? Is there any indication that Gideon did anything wrong by this? I don't believe so either. I believe that there comes a time in our relationship with God. You see, some people have gotten the idea God's always in a hurry. I found out God's always in time. In fact, God acts like He's got all the time in the world. A lot of times He seems too slow for me. I could get on my horse and run, and I'd give God a pretty chase. He'd have a hard time being up with me. I'd be doing all His works. I remember when I used to go up the altar and pray, Lord, help me do this and help me do that. I was way out ahead of God and saying, come on, God, let's get this job done. Do you remember those days? Maybe some of you are right there now. I don't know. Well, anyway, there's nothing wrong with confirming. Oh, I remember the concept I was going to be on the 1948 Importation of Confirmation. Because during this latter rain idea and prophecy, all kinds of prophets began to move around Pentecostal realm. A lot of those prophets are still alive right now and moving among the charismatic and the full gospel realm. But they didn't teach this lesson in the detail that I want you to learn it. I'm not trying to scare anybody of prophets, because God did give apostles and what? Prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. There's nothing wrong with a prophet. But when a prophet comes on you and makes you think that if you don't respond immediately, I'm suggesting for your analysis that that man is prophesying out of his own soul, not the Spirit. You see what I'm driving at? I was at a big tent meeting down in Philadelphia where I heard one of the major healing evangelists tell the people, if you don't get up here with your $20 bills, when you get out of the tent, there's going to be a car come along and run over you. Now, that's beyond my ability as a Bible student or teacher to see any parallel in that realm. God doesn't work that way. He's got lots of time, and if He wants you to put $20 in the offering, you have a right to ask for time, to ask for confirmation. So we came up with the new words, impartation and confirmation. And God imparts to a prophet, and He also confirms. And there's nothing wrong with asking for a confirmation, especially for things that are hard to do. However, there are times, naturally, after a prophet is confirmed as a prophet, after you have confidence and his prophecies have come to pass often, if a prophet, I don't want to name any particular one here in this group, but one of our people who had been established stood up all of a sudden right now and said, thus saith the Lord, in 270 seconds, this basement will explode. Everybody run out of here. Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I would quickly get everybody out of here as fast as I could. Because if it didn't happen, very little was lost. But now we have prophets in Florida saying, the month of April 1976, a great devastating inundation of the peninsula of Florida is about to occur. Get out. Well, that's a little different now. That's a little different. Because leaving Florida is a lot different than leaving this basement. Is that all right? It requires a whole lot more money. It's a whole lot more embarrassing when you have to go back. However, if something had been churning in my heart about my safety and somebody a prophecy about 270 seconds, the basement blows up, it wouldn't take much to get me up those stairs. Because it was not an impartation, it was a confirmation of something that had already been churning. And if I were living in Florida and had already been scared, and somebody came along with a prophecy like that, that might be all it took to tilt the scale and start the car and get out. But I sure wouldn't move immediately on the voice of an unknown prophet, because God will always confirm. And the harder it is, it seems like the more patient God is with us. Because we're not finding fault with God. Did you hear Gideon? Did he ever find fault with God? Did he ever? All he said was, God, I just want to make sure. I want to know. Is this you? Am I hearing rightly? Give me a sign. There's nothing wrong with asking for a sign. There's nothing wrong with a confirmation. But when the prophet or the prophecy is already established, sometimes you have to move more quickly. In the case of the Florida thing, it was from October of 75 until April of 76. So there's plenty of time to confirm it. And I'm convinced that if I ask God for a confirmation and didn't get it, then it wasn't from God. Because I can't remember any time in the Bible ever when anyone ever asked for an egg and got a serpent, or asked for bread and got a stone. Can you? But there are those who would make you think that if you don't immediately respond to the way they see or think, that you're going to lose out. These are very, what I call, hot-headed prophets. Hard-headed. And I sure have been raised among a bunch of them in my own religious experience, who feel like that you've got to see things and follow things their way. There was a fella in California, who decided it was time for all the people in the church to climb up the mountain and put on white robes because Jesus was coming. It was very embarrassing because they had to get down off the mountain and wash their robes. He didn't come. But I'm convinced there were a lot of people in that group who just went along because they felt the social pressure and had to go along. There are some other people that stayed back. And that prophecy divided some families. And there are some divorces of record now because some of the people stayed and some went. I believe some of the people were following the prophet, not the God. Is that okay? And I think that it's wise to ask for a confirmation outside of the control of the prophet. If I were to prophesy something to you, thus saith the Lord, thou shalt. And it would be hard for you to do. And my wife came along and prophesied the same thing. That's not impartation and confirmation. That's the same prophecy. Because theoretically, I control her. Or if you're in a church and the pastor prophesies something and one of the board members prophesies the same thing, that's not impartation and confirmation. That could be the same prophecy from the board. You follow what I'm saying here now? So in all these cases, these confirmations came outside the control because Gideon was a prophet. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, And all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod. Now, this is not the Herod of the New Testament. So that the hosts of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. Now, I've done some checking on this. I don't think that the Midianites were on the north. I believe these guys were on the north. I believe it's a translation problem, but I don't think it's important right now. The Lord said unto Gideon, "The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands. Lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, Mine own hand hath saved me." This is a very serious thing because in 1967, just after the war, we had the opportunity of going to Israel, and we heard constantly from the Israelites, "Mine own hand hath saved me." When it was so obvious that they had won a war in 6 days, the like of which no nation had ever done in the history of the world, and they thought it was their might and power. "Now therefore, go to, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, Whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead." And they returned to the people, 20,000, and 2,000, there remained 10,000. The Lord said unto Gideon, "The people are yet too many. Bring them down to the water, and I'll try them for thee there. It shall be that of whom I say unto thee, This shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee, and whomsoever I say unto thee, This shall not go with thee, the same shall not go." I want to back up for just a minute. Gideon's fourth test, of course the third one was the fleece, and the fourth one was when he had to tell the people there are just too many. All the fearful, go on back. Now, I don't know if it had been me, and I was Moses, and I just commanded the people bring all the gold and silver into the temple so that we can build God a house. And the coffers got full. And one day, Moses said, command the people and said, stop bringing the stuff in. There's just too much. Tell them to don't bring any more in. I don't know about you, but that would have been a hard command to issue. And whether you're hearing it or not, I don't know whether you see it or not. Because, man, when you can get the people to where they're bringing the money in, why stop them? Why, you never know, there might be a cost overrun on this project. Have them keep it coming, man. Keep it coming. Come on now, you know how it is. It's the same basic spirit that's right here. 32,000 say we could do better with 45. And instead, he says, all the fearful go on home. So now he's down to what? Was it 1,000? I forget what that was. What was it? Oh, 10,000. And now they're at the water in verse 5. So he brought the people to water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth. Now, I had a lot of trouble with this when I was in Sunday school. Him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth upon his knees to drink. Set the other guy on the other side. Till I found out it was this way. That those who ran to the water and fell on their hands and knees and put their face and mouth in the water were to be put on one side. And those who, with their head up, looking around, took their hand into the water and then lapped the water out of their hand in an awareness method or mood was set on another side, though it, you know, it's not quite so clear in this King James idea. That's the concept. And there were only 300 who approached it with the constant awareness, or I might say lack of trust.
This Bible teaching by David E. Ball will continue on cassette number 2.